When the University of Illinois chess team made the game's Final Four last year, Michael Auger and his teammates were a bit lax about it. They never expected to have another chance to compete for the President's Cup, but learned in December they'd qualified for the second straight year. Auger says they're underdogs by a mile.
We've all had very good luck on the national level. You know, Eric's won a national championship. I've won a national quick chess championship, but they're recruiting the best players in the world.
They include Webster University, University of Maryland Baltimore County, and Texas Tech, schools that give scholarships to the best chess players. I'm Jeff Bosser. Today on Focus, we'll discuss the U of I team's success and what they're doing to prepare the second time around. That includes raising funds for the competition in New York and hiring a coach. I'm joined this hour by Michael Auger and Al Lawrence, writer for Chess Life magazine. Collegiate Chess, this morning on Focus. Our program begins after this hour's news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jeff Bossert. The chess team at the University of Illinois is weeks away from its second straight national championship effort. The team didn't have any expectations last year, but in planning for this trip to New York, they've started up a fundraising campaign of over $9,000. Their effort to win the President's Cup at the Chess Final Four includes not only travel expenses this year, but hiring a coach. The U of I is clearly the underdog here. They'll be taking on three teams that recruit players and provide scholarships to chess players. Joining me now in the first half of the program is U of I junior and chess team member Michael Auger. Welcome to the show.
It's nice to be here.
Later this hour, we'll be joined by Al Lawrence. He's a writer for Chess Life magazine and director of the chess program at Texas Tech University. He's also the former executive director of the United States Chess Federation. He'll join us in the second half of the program. But first, we'll talk with Michael about the team's success. So you're just a couple of weeks away, a few weeks away from April 4th through the 6th of the championships in New York. Are you nervous right now?
Well, it's an honor to even be getting to this point. So I think the nerves, they're there. And we're really pushing really hard this year. We want to make some sort of wave, you know, bigger than last year. Now this is the second time we've been there. So I guess there's a little bit of nerves. But.
And this is your second appearance. So talk about the first time and your attitude leading into that and how this is a little bit different the second time around.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first time it was just like we had won the lottery. It was just a great feeling. We were happy to be even going. And, you know, when the second time came around, it was a really odd feeling. It's like, okay, we just won the lottery twice. It was a really weird feeling. So going into this event, it's like, okay, well, we've already been here. Now, you know, the next step is to do something different, right? Do something big here, see what we can do. So,
if you have a story about chess, who you first learned it from, if you enjoy playing the game with someone, particularly a friend or family member, or if you have a question for Michael Auger about the U of I chess team, you can reach us at 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. All right, Michael, just a few brief sentences for those who have never played or maybe haven't played in a long, long time. Remind us how you play chess.
Well, the game's all about getting to the king. I mean, the king's the most important piece. It's got an army of pieces around it to try and defend it and trying to take down the other king. The goal is to attack the king and leave it in a space where it can't get out of it. So,
That's a pretty good short description. I tried to get online and remember myself where everything moves. Let's talk a bit about the strategy. Putting this team in a position where you may actually win the President's Cup this year. You didn't have a coach last time, but you're putting together a fundraising campaign. What's your attitude going into this, since you're trying to actually achieve a little more this year?
Well, we got so much support from the local Illinois chess community, many different people, and we really want to make them proud. We really want to do something after they've shown us so much support. So we're putting in huge hours, probably more hours than I've ever put into chess. We've hired a coach, Yuri Shulman, who's been absolutely great and helped guide us in many different ways. We've had another coach recently take us on, and his name is Grievous, and he is helping us on a monthly basis with lots of homework. So we're really trying a lot harder this year to do as much as we can.
And we were just talking before the program how many hours you're putting in to practice.
Yeah, I mean, we've got an hour private lesson a week, with Yuri Shulman, and then we have a club meeting for anyone in U of I to come, and that's about 2-3 hours. We get some chess done there. We also have a meeting on Wednesday where we put in another 3 hours, and then a monthly session with Grievous, which can is usually about 4 hours. So
is it easy to balance that with schoolwork?
No, but it's worth it. It's enjoyable. I kind of like having a time crunch. It makes you feel productive.
We're talking about chess and the U of I chess team today on Focus. Last year, you have to go to D.C. for it. This year, it's New York, so you have a big fundraising campaign. Where is that at right now?
We've raised about 85%, I believe our thermometer says. It's about, I think we raised $7,500, $7,600, which is more than I would have ever imagined. And I'm so excited to have gotten this far.
And you and the chess team, you know, you guys know each other pretty well. And talk about Eric, one of your teammates. You've known each other since you were kids.
Well, me and Eric, I actually met him at my first chess tournament that I ever played. I think it might have been his second. We were about 8 years old, and we've really known each other ever since very well. So,
how do you practice chess? I mean, is it? It just seems odd that I think you told me when we did an interview earlier this year that it's a tightly knit group chemistry, but it's not a team. I mean, there's a team sport, but you're playing one-on-one with somebody else. So how do you learn off of each other and develop a camaraderie and chemistry as a chess team?
Well, I think in terms of our actual competitions, the way we work together really well is we know each other's strengths and weaknesses very well. If I'm looking at Eric's position, and you know, some people would be looking at it and going, he's just a little bit worse. But I know this thing about Eric, he tends to hold really bad positions. So I can be comfortable in knowing that he might hold the draw. And Leo, I know, is very an aggressive player, and I know what he's used to playing, what he likes to play. And we really get a good sense of how we need to perform in the match so that our team wins. And I think having that sort of understanding of each other really helps in a team match.
Is chess easier to learn today because of online gaming or other skills just in technology that you wouldn't have had 20 or some plus years ago?
Yeah, chess has made remarkable improvements in recent years, and I think a lot of it is due to, you know, you can get a computer program that will tell you very close to what the best moves in the position are right off the bat. It's like having a GM coach with you. In general, you have more access to opening knowledge, so much more access to knowledge in chess, opposed to having to go out and find all the right books.
And there are two organizations that are kind of tied with each other. You said there's a chess club, and then there's this, and then there's your team that is headed to try to win this national competition. Tell me a bit about the differences between the two.
Yeah, when I came on as president as a sophomore, I saw that we had the opportunity to really compete as a team and make some big waves. And I wanted to continue to have our outreach to the community as well as the university kids that maybe aren't top-tier chess players but really want to play chess. It's a great game that should be spread around. So we divided, and we had one practice on Wednesday for our team, and then we have on Sundays we have our opportunity for anybody to come play chess and enjoy the great game.
And when did you reach out to Yuri this year? The discussion as far as, we need a coach, let's find somebody.
Pretty much right after Pan Ams, we knew we were going to have to do something big to make waves at Final Four. So we kind of decided very quickly that we should contact a coach. And it was a close decision between a lot of grandmasters that we all know very well and respect so much. And I think we all decided to go with Yuri in the end.
Well, Yuri Shulman, the team's coach, is now joining me on the line to talk with us for a few minutes. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, hello.
Yuri, explain to our audience how you were recruited by the U of I chess team.
Recruiting is not a hard thing to do. I mean, probably, you know, because we are kind of not only, we have a relationship of student versus teacher, we also kind of have a relationship of being friends for such a long time. And I know Michael and Eric for a very long time, and Eric since almost, you know, like he was probably in second grade, maybe. Yeah, so, but, Michael contacted me, and he was wondering if I would be interested to teach the team, and I was absolutely happy to accept the idea.
Well, and how did you become a chess coach? How did you get started doing that?
At some point, I realized that probably my ambitions of becoming world champion, you know, should be put on the shelf. So I thought, you know, maybe I should try to teach as well. And it's interesting that when I started teaching, I showed one of probably some of my best results. I became U.S. champion. I took second place at the chess world team championship and took the bronze medal. But at that point, you know, it was very interesting that I didn't already have ambitions, and I thought it would be much more interesting to start teaching.
Are you coaching a lot of other teams?
Oh, no. Eric and Michael asked me is a rare thing, you know, like where you talk to the team. Usually, like, you know, like chess is a kind of more commonly individual sport, so usually you would teach more individuals. And in my career, I was working with a lot of strong players. You know, I was helping at some point to Boris Gelfand, who was number two player in the world, to Susan Polder, who was the women world champion, but and a lot of other players. But I really never worked with the team like that.
So, what do you do as a chess coach? Explain your job.
The main thing is to figure out, you know, what the students need in order to improve. So, like, you know, and usually it's like, I kind of call it like, you know, doctor-patient approach. So, like, you know, I kind of prescribe the pills, what is needed to be done in order to improve, and the students work on it, and they try to make sure that, like, you know, their strong parts, their strong qualities are getting developed, and they get rid of any weaknesses they have.
So how what does practice consist of? Explain a bit how that's run.
How do we run it? Like, usually we are learning, I mean, there are different ways to do it. Like, you know, like you can have one-on-one session, you can have group sessions, you can have internet session, you can have chess camp. So there are a lot of different activities, but with the team, we are mainly, like, you know, doing online lessons over the internet, and we discuss, for instance, we go over the games of the guys, or we are going over certain openings, or maybe a certain middle game problem, which they have issue with, or maybe some knowledge, like, you know, that we are discussing some typical endgame positions, where, like, you have to just know something rather than even to understand. So there, I mean, really, it's impossible to describe it in one interview. There are a lot of things you have to learn in chess. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't have people, you know, like with 30 years experience still knowing maybe, you know, less than 1% about chess.
So what happens when you make a bad move? I mean, I assume that in practice you figured out quickly that you'll put yourself in a position for checkmate, or, you know, could potentially mm-hmm. be in trouble in the game.
Right. So, I mean, my main principle is cut your losses. If you've made a bad move, just nothing happened. You know, it's not just like, you know, you got hurt, you know, like you got an accident. You know, still, you know, everything is going fine. Now it is now. Whatever is in the past is in the past. If you're able to treat yourself psychologically, if you're happy about where you are at this moment, you would be able to put your best effort to find a solution out of the problem you have. But if you start being emotional and say, oh, you know, I'm not a strong player, I'm really, like, how could I make such a mistake, then definitely you have much less chance to get out of problems. So just the main thing is to act as nothing happened.
And do a lot of people do what you do? I mean, there are quite a few chess coaches, a lot of people that make a career at this?
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Yeah, like, I think it's getting popular, and there are probably, like, you know, I don't know, even hard to say how many grandmasters in the U.S. are teaching right now. But I would say that, like, some of the grandmasters, you know, like, they have it as a part-time job, they have a regular job, and they also teach. Some players try to play more often and teach a little bit. So, but in general, I think everyone is trying to do it, because it's a nice way to communicate with people. It's a really nice social activity, you know, when you teach someone. And again, in chess, what is really amazing, that you don't have to wait for your student to become PhD in science before, you know, you'll see that he really achieved something. You know, even in 2 weeks, you can see your fruits of your efforts. But, of course, usually it takes, much more substantial amount of time.
And what's the most success you've seen as a coach?
I mean, you know, like I mean, hardly I can call Susan Polgar or Boris Gelfand my students. I mean, I was helping them. I was their second, but you know, they became world champion and number two in the world. So I would say, you know, those two players are kind of fine. But of course, you know, of the success of the students who just began studying with me, I had one master. Trevor Magnus, who went all the way from the beginning, like, I mean, maybe he was like 1,000+ rated, and he went all the way to masters. And now I have students who I taught how to move pieces, and they're getting into around 1,800, and hopefully, you know, they'll get to master level. So,
and when's the next practice for you two?
With Michael?
Yeah.
Yes. So, we hope to meet on Sunday. We don't have holidays, right? So we work every day on chess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Yuri Shulman, it's been great having you come into the program. Best wishes to you as you get ready for the national championships.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
I really hope our team will do well. Yeah. So good luck to our team.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for talking. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for calling.
Bye-bye. So, back to our in-studio guests, Michael, I want to talk a bit about chess culture. And I hate to bring it up, but there's a nerdy stereotype or maybe someone that may not know a lot about chess. Is it becoming a more hip thing to be on the chess team and a lot of people, you know, will tend to follow that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's making some pride. It's all progress. It's always going to be kind of have that, you know, stereotype to it. I mean, I was on the football team and the chess team in high school, and honestly, I think the chess team was actually almost cooler at our school. So, believe it or not, it was.
Was the football team not very good?
No.
Okay, and how did you find time to play football and do chess in high school?
I played freshman year, so that freshman year, and then I realized, yeah, I really like chess better.
So. We were talking before Yuri joined us about the two separate groups here on the U of I campus. Have you tried to pry someone away to say, look, you can, you know, we can go for this national award? Or do you think that more people, there's just some that are stuck on, I want to make this a hobby and nothing else?
Well, it's such a commitment to really get yourself to go from, you know, just starting or taking it as a hobby to making the jump to a team. And I think a lot of people are very intimidated by that jump. But what I like to tell them is that we have a kid on our team who's about around where I'm rated, and he started his senior year of high school, so it can be done. And I like to emphasize that point. It's a great story, I think.
Well, how did you get your teammate? We talked about Eric Rosen, your teammate. How did you pry him away? Because other schools were trying to recruit him, the kind of schools that you're going to be taking on next month. And U of I is not one of those schools. So what was the appeal playing chess with, you two friends playing chess? Or how did you get him to come here for that?
I've always joked around saying that I did everything but sign the papers for him. But I think, being able to, I mean, we were going to be roommates. We had, you know, we've known each other for so long. It's, I think, going to college is an experience. And he may go to those colleges and save a lot of money. But I think he really wanted to have the computer science degree that we have here, as well as, I think, just being part of a chess community that he was familiar with.
And what was your own school of thought since chess was a big deal? And you could have gone somewhere, certainly, that may have paid you a scholarship for you to attend the school there and play chess.
I actually did attend a college where I got a scholarship to my freshman year, and I transferred here after the first semester there. So I really wanted to be a part of U of I. I've always, you know, I've wanted to be a part of U of I for a long time. I love the atmosphere here. I like being, you know, an Illini.
If you have any questions about for Michael or Audger, our U of I chess player, if you have any chess-related stories, you can contact us, 800-222-9455. We made reference to grandmasters. And how old are most of the grandmasters? And they seem they're just really great chess players.
I mean, I think normally someone that is working at chess will, in general, tend to become a grandmaster in their 20s. That's not to say it's impossible to become a grandmaster later. It's more common in the 20s. And then people can play chess forever. It's a great game that you can play forever. So it's a good mix between 20 and on.
Do you have a personal goal for, like, I'd like to get to this level, whether it be, you know, in this competition in a few weeks or just playing with friends and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I find goals to be somewhat limiting. I always set myself to do everything that I could possibly do. So to set myself a goal is just like a stopping point. But I set little spots on the way where I go, yes, I got here. So, I mean, I'd love to become a grandmaster. I'd love to do more, but we'll see.
Let's talk about, we made a mention of them, but the other schools that are involved again in the Final Four and the kind of programs they have, and we'll be talking about that a bit later in the, with the second half of the program. But again, remind us who you'll be taking on and how they are so heavily involved in recruiting players.
So we'll be playing against UMBC, Texas Tech, and Webster University. And these teams are, you know, heavily favorited teams. Webster, their board three is ranked 20th in the world, not just for college kids, but for everyone in the world. So he's way up there. He's board three. Board two is around 23rd in the world. Their board one or board two, something like that, has drawn the world champion of the past. And the board four is like the player that we've been looking up to since we were little kids, like the United States champion. Like, he's really high caliber player. So their whole team is just insanely good.
And you're talking chess language. What is board the numbers you were providing, what does that mean?
Yeah, so I mean, when we play a match, we have our top player sit at board one and our lowest player sitting at board four. Whoever's team wins, the majority of the matches wins. So,
well, how do you get along with other players in the Final Four? Are you guys friends when you're not, you know, involved in a match and you go have lunch together and stuff like that?
Well, I think it's actually really funny because I think they find it so funny that we continuously keep making it, because it's really a huge upset that we're doing this, and they've come to really be rooting for us. I know Webster's team, you know, is offering us bus rides to the tournament when we get there. They're being so supportive of us because I think they love the story. So it's really exciting to see it.
And we talked a little bit about how you and your teammate have known each other since one of them since you were real kids. You're eight. Who taught you to first play, and what was the appeal of the game?
It's actually really funny. At the time, I asked my 5-year-old cousin, and he taught me to play chess. So I was about, I think, 8 years old. He was five. So I learned with help from him and my aunt, who kind of fixed the little things that we didn't quite get right. But so it's very interesting now for them to have taught me chess. And, you know, they didn't go on with chess, but they taught me.
And I was wondering, you talked about how it does peel a little bit away from schoolwork, but does it help you in the sense of analytical thinking in, say, a math class or something like that?
No, I hope so. I like math. I think it's really hard, but I like math. I'm planning to go to law school, so I'm studying for the LSAT right now, and I think it really does help, particularly with the logic game section of the exam, because I mean, I've been practicing it all my life, this logical thinking type ordeal.
But it's not, I don't think it's a natural thing that chess players are maybe majoring in physics or something like that. I mean, it may just be some coincidence there.
You know, I see it all the time happen, so I'm not sure what the link is. It seems like it could be related, but I'm a communication major myself, so.
somebody, Eric, called in on line four and said, how do you go about donating to the team?
If you go to www.IlliniChessClub.org, you can go right on our homepage. You have the opportunity to donate to our website. And we appreciate every single thing we get.
So, and you're still around 1,500, 2,000 or so shy, something like that?
Yeah, we're still missing that amount. But again, it's a miracle we've got.
You've got some good major donors that are part of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you guys to the point you're getting enough press or attention, or maybe whether it be the Daily Illini or some other media, maybe this program, you get recognized? I mean, obviously, basketball or football players get recognized on campus. Does anybody approach you? Hey, you're on the U of I chess team.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, last year I went to go deposit a check at our student account or something, and the person depositing the check for us recognized me. I think from some sort of news story last year. So that was really cool. I think it's happened maybe once or twice, but we have gotten a lot of recognition. It's been great.
We're talking about the U of I chess team on Focus and their final push for the Final Four of chess that will be in New York City in just a few weeks. It's April 4th through the 6th. And If you want to email us, it's will-talk@illinois.edu or at the, on the phone, 800-222-9455. Coming here to school, do you have a goal now to say, hey, look, I'm going to try to make this into a program that might involve scholarships? You did it originally elsewhere. So, has this drive maybe convinced some people, maybe some well-known chess players with the ability to donate some funds?
Well, it's certainly an avenue that we're looking at. We can't seek too much from the school because it doesn't really make sense. We're not the basketball team. We're not bringing in money. So for us to get money from that route, it's probably not so much. But this avenue to go to our alumni who have been so generous to us, and we appreciate it so much, and possibly, chess players that are in a place that can really help us out and help build the chess community, that would be a very good option.
What is the average length right now when... say maybe a match and you're in practice and then when you go to New York, how long are you going to be sitting there just totally focused on your opponent?
A lot of people find this hard to believe, but the games can go up to 7 hours. This time control for this tournament is about, I think it will go up to a peak of about 4 hours. So it's a little bit on the shorter end. Tournaments mix it up, but it's an enjoyable experience sometimes.
Well, and how do you prepare for this both physically and mentally? For one, because you can't think about if you're playing, you're getting close to the match, you can't be thinking of the championships. You can't be thinking about, I've got this paper due next week or any other personal distractions. And you've physically got to be ready. You've had to have, not be hungry, or you had to have used the bathroom and those sort of things.
Yeah, it's definitely your goal to eliminate any sort of distraction that you can. When I play a chess tournament, I have to stay at the hotel, and I might be thought of as crazy for this, but I have to be at the hotel. I have to be away in my own little chess environment. It's so much fun, but it also takes so much out of you if you don't put yourself in a place where you are comfortable to do this. So I think that's key for me, at least, in being focused.
And everybody's pretty good on the team about staying focused and having that drive, and they're not tempted to go to their hotel and turn on the TV and stuff like that.
Well, at a point, it's good to, most importantly, I believe it's to be relaxed. So TV isn't going to hurt, but I think there are certain distractions, getting worried about homework, all this other stuff that you really want to eliminate going into a tournament.
We're talking about the U of I chess team and collegiate chess in general this morning in Focus. I'm Jeff Bossert. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk with Al Lawrence. He's a writer for the publication Chess Life magazine, former executive director of the U.S. Chess Federation and director of the program at Texas Tech, which is one of the schools the U of I will be taking on in the Final Four in just a few weeks. I'm Jeff Bossert. You're listening to Focus. And we're back on Focus. I'm Jeff Bossert. We're talking about chess and collegiate chess and the game in general, and the University of Illinois chess team, which is making its final push for the President's Cup and the Final Four competition of chess in just a few weeks. And joining me now on the program to talk about the team and the program is Al Lawrence. The ride of the Final Four is the subject of an upcoming article in Chess Life magazine. Al is the former executive director of the United States Chess Federation, writes for the magazine, and he's director for the Texas Tech Chess Program, which, like the U of I, is also playing for the President's Cup. Welcome to the program, Al.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here, and I've been listening, and I've learned a lot.
Well, that's good that somebody that knows chess is picking up some more information. Now, this is a magazine that's distributed to members of the U.S. Chess Federation. So how do you come across finding stories like this U of I team and its Cinderella story?
Oh, of course, this is a great story. Chess Life magazine is the most widely read chess magazine in English. But a story like this doesn't come around very often. But I do want to add one thing. After you've been a dark horse winner 2 years in a row, people begin to have expectations for you. The Illinois team is a wonderful team, and a lot of the comments that Michael has made illustrate that being a team and playing as a team and knowing each other's strengths, weaknesses, and picking each other up, that's an awfully important part of team competition. These teams are 4-on-4, four players against four players. That's what Michael was talking about when he's talking about board 1, 2, 3, and 4. So playing as a team is very important, not just your individual skill and desire.
Well, let's talk about your own skills. I mean, and maybe how you came into your former job with the U.S. Chess Federation.
Oh, sure. You know, I learned the moves of chess as a youngster. My older brother taught me. But really, it was I didn't play until college when I went to what we call a simultaneous exhibition. That's where one very good player takes on all comers. And I thought that was just an extraordinary exhibition of mental skill. And that was done annually by a famous master at the University of Missouri, where I went. And so I came back the next year after reading a couple chess books and got a draw. I was very encouraged by that. The Army interrupted my chess, and then when I came back from the Army, really pretty late, I started playing in tournaments.
And how did the USCF start pulling in, you know, recruiting schools, recruiting members, and promoting itself?
Well, the USCF is really the official organizer of all official tournaments in the U.S. They have a tremendous scholastic program in the schools. They have every tournament that is a officially rated tournament is rated through the USCF. They have a great program of providing those ratings instantly. You know, when you play in rated chess, there's about 85,000 official members of the U.S. Chess Federation now. And when you play rated chess, you're very interested in, you know, how your latest results affected your rating. Every result you have, every game you play, affects your rating. It's a constant either gain or loss. And we have, you know, the USCF has 1,000 or so official clubs around the nation, as well as being part the U.S. Chess Federation is part of the World Chess Federation, which the acronym is FIDE. It's a French acronym for World Chess Federation. So the USCF is very interested in all levels of chess, and they hold some of the biggest scholastic events. Their so-called super nationals are held every 3 years, and between 5,000 and 6,000 school children play in those events. And then every year they have the national championships in high school, junior high, elementary, and thousands of kids play. So they do a lot.
And I'll ask you to put on your other hat as a coach for the Texas Tech team. How are you preparing for the President's Cup? I mean, you might have a different story to tell, maybe somewhat similar, as what we're hearing from Michael Augier here in the studio, since you're a sanctioned school for this program.
Well, you know, we have a former U.S. champion, Grandmaster Alex Onischuk, as our coach. We're very lucky to have him. He's been one of the top 100 players in the world for the last 15 years. He won the silver medal in the team this year, competing in the U.S. Championship again this year. So he trains every day and with our students, our scholarship students. And there's a couple things I'd like to say. I think everybody was right on in the previous half hour. But one of the things I'd like to make sure to mention is that you don't have to be a great chess player to benefit from chess. Playing chess has benefits for casual players, and in our program, we don't have just grandmasters. We have a lot of different rated players. We have players that wouldn't ever be able to qualify for the Final Four or even anything close to it, but they get a lot out of chess. They help us teach chess in schools. Our outreach program is actually our highest priority here at Texas Tech University, where we go into the schools and teach chess. So we are preparing our what we call our A-team for the tournament, no question about it. Alex Onischuk is working hard with them. But we continue to concentrate on other levels of chess as well.
I want to ask you the same question that I asked our guest in studio, Michael Augier, about what other benefits come away from the game. I mean, you talked a little bit about some of the analytical skills you may come up with. You know, what is your experience with that, and maybe what your students are dealing with?
Oh, well, I think there are well-documented benefits of chess for both young people and older people. For example, some of the studies now are very strong in pointing out that Alzheimer's is it helps to prevent Alzheimer's if you play chess. As far as younger people, it helps train organized thinking. It increases your creativity and improves your memory. It increases problem-solving skills and improves reading skills. These are all things that actually studies have been done about. It's not all anecdotal, even though there are strong anecdotal evidence for it. It improves concentration. There's also great social aspects. I liked it when you talked to Grandmaster Schulman about what do you do when you make a bad move. You do the same thing that you do in life. You say, well, I can't just start all over. I have to do the best I can with the situation I'm in. And so that's a big lesson, too, from chess.
We had an email sent in, and someone asked, how do chess players make sure their opponent isn't using a computer? I assume they mean by that maybe it's if you're sitting there with just two boards, I would assume this is pretty, pretty hard to do. But for either of my guests, there have been records of people trying to cheat their way through a game by, I don't know if there are websites that would track the kind of moves you would make ahead of time.
Well, one of the challenges of modern chess is that smartphones with the best programs on them can play extremely well, and they can give you results extremely well. Now, this is an aberration in chess for anyone to try this. This isn't anything that's going to anybody would even think about in the Final Four. And indeed, Texas Tech hosted the 2013 Pan American Intercollegiate Team Championships here in Lubbock, Texas, and actually that's how you qualify for the Final Four. And we had no incidents like this. Are there scenarios you can think about it happening? Yes, there. You know, we, as an organization, obviously there, you know, the technology is challenging us to make some rules about it. Players are free to leave the board and go to the restroom. I mean, you just talked about how long a chess game can take. Sometimes you have to stretch your legs. Sometimes you have to use the restroom. So, if a player did have a smartphone armed with the right software, could be definitely an advantage. But again, this is an aberration. This doesn't occur very often. Yes, you know, it's a concern, but certainly isn't a concern for the Final Four.
Can you tell me a bit about the recruitment of this? Because I'm naive about this whole thing, about the effort of a school like Texas Tech or the other ones in the Final Four and other really good schools about actively going out and recruiting like you would expect to see at a high school with an athletic director.
Well, it's kind of my job is sort of a mini athletic director program, you know, for chess. And it is true that we recruit from all over the world. We also recruit all levels of chess players, not just the top players. Many of our scholarships are very partial scholarships, but they allow students from other states to qualify for in-state tuition, which would be about a 50% savings. Now, our very top students, they approach having a full scholarship. So we keep track of young players around the world, and definitely in the United States, that who are college-bound, they want to go to a good school. They're a good student. That's very, very ironclad requirement. We want to bring the best students through this program to Texas Tech University. But sure, our coach has been in chess and networked on a high level in chess his whole life. I've been in chess my whole life. So we keep track of who might be a good prospect to come to Texas Tech.
We've got a caller on the line, Craig from line four, Craig from Frankfurt. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. It's a pleasure to speak to both of you and to the young man from U of I. Good luck.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask a question about the competition aspect of it, because it seems like chess, I'm not very good at, but it seems like it's such a mental, psychological game. When you're in competition, is there do your opponents ever try things kind of to throw you off your game, I guess you'd say, or, you know, engage in, for lack of a better term, psychological warfare, like little tricks to try to throw you off, or is that considered so far outside the chess ethos that that wouldn't be allowed or encouraged?
I think there's definitely a psychological aspect to it. And I think that there's definitely, you're sitting across the board, and it may be really subtle things, but, I mean, sometimes you catch a glance from your opponent in a certain way. You know, you're looking at their facial expressions, trying to get a read on how they're playing the board. You should kind of try and not let that hit you at all or affect you, but there's certainly a psychological undertone to the game.
And how do you stay mentally strong for, what you said, 7 hours? I mean, just and you might be start worrying about your appearance, you know, if you got your hair out of place, I don't know.
It can be grueling. It can have a very strong, it's a lot of mental endurance. It's like running a race. It's mentally enduring.
One of the effects is you're sitting there for many hours in silence, so that every little grimace, every little noise, maybe somebody inadvertently puts down a piece too hard on their reply, so they kind of snap it down. Everything is magnified, and you really don't know what your opponent intends or doesn't intend. I think the most frequent player ploy is simply game face. Maybe you make a bad move and realize it, but you're not going to reflect that. You're poker faced. Would you agree with that, Michael?
I totally agree.
I mean, Michael, do you ever have to like just practice that poker face? Sounds silly, but stare into a mirror and think, okay, this is the way I'm going to look, and not end up, you know, giving something away with a smirk or something.
I think I play enough chess to practice it in the games, but I like to think I have a good poker face.
we have an expression, coffee house chess, and this is not tournament chess, but it's the exact opposite. Maybe you make a very good move. It's a little trap. And then your expression is, oh, my goodness, I just made a terrible move. That's certainly fun, and when you're playing recreationally, you do that. But top players won't pull something like that in a big tournament.
We wanted to thank Craig for the call a couple of minutes ago. We're talking about the U of I chess program and chess in general. And we have a few more minutes left in the show. If you want to call in, 800-222-9455. Al, I wanted to ask you about how chess is being introduced at earlier ages and the use of it in K-12 education. I have a 7-year-old nephew who plays once a week in school, so I assume that's kind of a widespread thing now.
Oh, you know, it is. We just had a tournament here in Lubbock, Texas, on Saturday at one of the main high schools, and we had nearly 200 players from K-12 and quite a few parents that are interested in that. So Michael was talking a little bit about this, the resources now that that young people have, that all players have. You don't have to be young to start and get benefit out of chess. The resources that you have online, like any other activity nowadays, are tremendous. I mean, you know, just go back 20 years, we had to go to a chess club maybe once a week to play 4 or 5 games. Now, learning players and very young players can play thousands of games, thousands of quick games, in the same period of time. And practice is 90% of, you know, practice and dedication is 90% of chess.
We had a tweet a while ago from Todd, and I neglected to mention that, Michael, you teach at the chess club at his daughter's school, and says that she does a great job. So you teach kids to play chess, right?
Yeah.
What's your experience?
I love teaching chess. I think I loved it as a kid, so I feel like when I'm teaching it to them, they're really gaining something that they will be able to do the rest of their lives. It takes a lot of energy out of you, but I really enjoy it. And I teach in school settings, group settings, and I give private lessons as well.
And is this something that is lucrative for you? Or is it just a charitable thing?
No, it's definitely something that's lucrative for me. It helps fund my own chess endeavors, my hiring of coaches, and et cetera. So.
I want to ask Al Lawrence here another question that was brought up earlier about the image of the player, and is it becoming a more hip thing and not something that's associated with, you know, with, let's use the term, geeks?
Well, certainly in my day, you know, I go back to the 60s in chess, and, you know, it always had a positive image. It always was used by financial corporations in their ads for making strategic moves, you know, and your investments. And it still is today, and of course today it's used a lot in the geopolitical arena, you know, who's making the best moves on the geopolitical chess board. You know, nowadays I think we all know that we need to be nice to the nerds in school because we'll probably work for them. And I think that's, you know, it's just a different world now. People think differently of what we used to call, of who we used to call nerds.
And you know, my image still of chess, other than when I was playing when I was probably 13, is still something like in 1997. We had Deep Blue, the computer versus Gary Kasparov.
Right.
I guess we've come a long way since we had a computer beat somebody in 1997.
Well, I think people realize that it's not about computers beating people. The chess is like a lot of other things. Computers can beat us all day long at something, whether it's Scrabble or whether it's checkers or whether it's spelling. You know, they're not made up of cells. They're not living organisms. So it's a different a competition. We don't compete against computers these days. We, you know, chess is for people.
And Michael Auger, I'm wondering too. I mean, how far ahead you can see moves? It's not as if you can read three or four moves ahead. But obviously, I mean, once your opponent moves, you will make the next one, and maybe the next one after that.
Well, yeah, it depends on a given position. In one position, I'm not going to look ahead at all. I'm just going to look at the position, make some judgments based on the, you know, common themes in the position. Another position, I could be thinking 10 moves ahead. And it'll be a position that calls for that, and you have to. So it depends on where you are in the game.
And has that been kind of your line of thinking, Al?
Oh, sure. Exactly right. You know, Michael sums it up. And, you know, you have to know when you need to do that hard, time-consuming, number-crunching analysis, and when to use your intuition or when the move is so-called obvious. So that's all part of training and instinct as well, just to know when to do what.
What else are you doing, Al, to get ready for the President's Cup? I mean, you have to just, like, eat, sleep, and breathe chess because you're writing about it and you're preparing a team for it, and you used to be involved in a national organization.
Well, you know, we are, of course, preparing for the Final Four, and that's definitely a highlight. You know, we were kept out of the Final Four last year. Let me see who that was by. Oh, yeah, Illinois. And so we're happy to be in it this year. And, you know, I want to echo, it's a mutually supportive culture in chess. And we're very pleased, you know, at the story that Illinois has made now 2 years in a row. But we also have other things going on. We still have our school programs. You know, every day we're out teaching in the local schools. So we have those things going out as well.
And I imagine just stories like the U of I team just kind of come out of the woodwork. You're probably finding a lot of interesting things to write about, and you really can't wait for the next issue to be published.
You know that that every time I talk to a chess member, it doesn't have to be a top player, I find out, you know, some interesting story. They disarmed a nuke, who they met, you know, what they did in their life. One of the things about chess is it's totally egalitarian. You meet CEOs. You meet people who carry a lunch pail their whole career, and I think they all have interesting stories.
What's the most? Is there a chess player? I mean, not a person not known for their chess, but an actor, politician, whoever that would be most familiar with, who's, you know, really terrific chess player.
Let's see, Michael, can you help out with that? Who's somebody well known? I know that. The Klitschko's, right? The boxers, they're very high level chess players. You know, the heavyweight boxing champions.
Yeah, I actually just heard. I was watching a YouTube video. It was a Happy Birthday Colin thing that has been going on, and in it, David Spade came on and said, 11 was a good year for me. I think that year I was a chess champ or something like that."
Uh-huh.
I was like,
okay.
"Oh, that's really cool."
Okay.
Just a couple of minutes left to talk about collegiate chess. Any final pointers, Al, that you want to provide to fans of the game and the appeal to get started? Or
well, you know, the Final Four will be on broadcast on the internet, and you can find out about that by googling college chess or going to the Texas Tech University chess website. Just Google Texas Tech Chess. And you can Google probably Illinois University Chess and perhaps get the same link, right, Michael?
Yeah, if not, we'll put it up as soon as we can.
There you go. And you know, you're talking about chess and who plays and who's famous. You know, 70% of Americans play, American adults have played at least one chess game in their life. 15% of Americans play regularly at least a game a year. So it's not quite the arcane pursuit that sometimes we think of it. There are a lot of people playing chess.
And there are, I assume, obviously you play online and mm-hmm. more video game versions. I remember one from the early 90s called Battle Chess, where you'd actually see animation
right.
of the
yeah
you know, the right. elimination of the other creatures.
200 million people play on chess worldwide, play online, play chess worldwide.
Well, Al Lawrence, I appreciate you joining the program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And you know, and I'm sure there, and I know that you have a website as well your program organization has a website.
It's uschess.org. uschess.org, and there's lots of free information about how to get involved in chess. There'll be stories that you can read about the college chess program. So highly recommend it. And I want to wish the best to Michael and all the rest of the competitors in the Final Four, and we look forward to seeing them there.
All right. Thanks, Al. Al Lawrence, he's writer for Chess Life magazine, the former executive director of the U.S. Chess Federation, and heads up the Texas Tech Chess Program. And Michael Auger from the U of I chess team. Best of luck to you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks
for
very much. Check 'em Tech. Bye-bye.
All right. Today's show was produced by Ryan Weber and Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft was our technical director. For additional thoughts on today's program, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert. This is Focus on WILL.